Welcome to The Inquisitive Tongue. I'm your host, Nanette Weiser, and with me is a superstar, Helen Freund. She is the food and dining critic for the Tampa Bay Times. And if you opened up your paper, you would have seen, oh my God, it is the most incredible issue. Top 50 restaurants. You had a big event, Helen. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all. And yeah, you're right. It was a huge issue and a huge endeavor. It took me, I'd say it's probably like, I've been working on this for the better part of a year. I really kind of cracked down around July and then started really just doing nothing but working on this list. And then the other part, which you mentioned, was putting together this like incredible event, which I really have to like say our marketing team was really, really crucial there, and they did a great job with that. We had it at the Floridian Social in St. Petersburg, and yeah, it was great.
So, you know, we're gonna talk a little bit about your history, then we're going to return to the top 50 to do the big reveal for those who you all should be subscribing to the Tampa Bay Times. You love to cook. You were never a picky eater. Tell us a little bit about how your love affair with food developed. And you even went to the Cordon Bleu in Paris.
Yeah, I have always loved food from a very, very, very young age. My parents weren't not that they weren't the greatest cooks, but they were just very busy. So I started cooking at a very young age, too. I started reading cookbooks, I think I was 4 or 5. Like, I was really, from a very young age, it was something that I just became very obsessed with. I had every possible subscription to every food magazine, Gourmet, Bon Appetit, Saveur, Food and Wine, you name it. And so, you know, throughout my adolescence, I loved to cook, and I always thought about going to culinary school and where and what that would look like. But I always also wanted to be a journalist, so I sort of did both. I went to school for journalism, and then I also went to, the Le Cordon Bleu to go to culinary school. And what I realized there is that I did end up cooking professionally a little bit in catering kitchens, but I realized that I really was more interested in food writing in the long term.
So you were the restaurant critic and dining editor in another great city, New Orleans. Mm-hmm. What was it about St. Pete that beckoned to you?
Well, the job at the Tampa Bay Times beckoned to me. but also, I'll have to admit, I really did not know very much about the St. Pete or Tampa Bay scene before moving here, but the newspaper had such an incredible reputation for doing just stellar journalism and really incredible investigations and enterprise work. And so when this job popped up, applying for it was kind of a no-brainer.
Are you still a picky eater?
No.
So, although Geoduck Sashimi had me, I want to say that it's so amazing. I want you to walk people through how you put this together, what your parameters were for choosing the top 50. And I love that you have such an array of global cuisines, expensive to non-expensive. Talk a little bit about behind the scenes of what you had to do.
Yeah, I mean, as my job, like when I'm acting as a restaurant critic, whenever I go out to eat, I'm paying attention to everything. Quality of food, excellent food is always that's the standard. If a restaurant was serving subpar anything, that was pretty much fodder for it to get kicked off the list if I was considering it. But really, it involved me eating out a lot. and when you putting together a list like this, I wanted to make sure that it was diverse in price point. You know, the Tampa Bay area is like geographically very expansive too. So I really didn't want it to just be, you know, a small selection of downtown St. Pete or Tampa. And so I tried to make it as inclusive for all our readers as possible. I think that, you know, 50 is still a smallish number when you're considering a culinary landscape like ours.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's so much more to it that you cover. You cover the food trucks, you cover the pop-ups, you cover the casual concepts. How do you find a lead? Do you hear from the restaurant themselves? Do you listen to the chat on Facebook? Where do you look for inspiration to find new places?
That's a great question. Really, it's everywhere. I read a lot of, I'm obviously on social media, so I pay attention to what I see there. But really, it's more getting into my car and driving around and just, you know, seeing what's out there and trying out places that perhaps I'd maybe heard something about, but I'd never been into before. It's a lot of sitting in my car and driving all over the place.
And I do love the fact that you've included places from all over Tampa Bay, not just Pinellas County. So I wanted to shine a light on a little bit of the top 10. So let's just do kind of a USA Today version.
Okay.
Rooster and the Till.
Yeah, Rooster and the Till. They were my pick for number one this year, and it was really fun choosing them because I think they were – it probably wasn't expected. They have landed on my predecessor's lists in years past. They've been around since 2013. You know, they have some serious longevity. But what they're doing is still so incredible and so exciting. And I really think that – I don't know. I think that kind of staying power just goes really far. And I feel like it's – what they're doing is really shining a light on what a lot of other smaller up-and-coming spots right now are trying to do as well.
Absolutely. And then there's Rocca.
Rocca and Tampa, yeah. They – I mean, incredible Italian food, modern, contemporary Italian, just – incredible pasta. You can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong. And then Il Retorno, which I believe had a Michelin star this year.
They did not get a Michelin star. No, they got recommended.
Recommended.
By the guide.
Yes. Which, by the way, let's just stop for a moment. From your point of view as the arbiter of taste in this community, tell our listeners what it means to be in the Michelin Guide, even to be mentioned as a city.
Even to be mentioned is a very, very high honor. The recommendations are slightly new. They've been sort of rolling them out and sort of bumping them up with a little bit more prestige than they have in years past. I think in years past, people were really just focused on stars. Then they sort of started incorporating the bib gourmands, which are supposed to go to restaurants that have, you know, good food at like a good value for their money. And then these recommendations are, you know, they're essentially all restaurants that are included in the guide. But to get a star is still like the, you know, or three stars, the most you can get. Like, but to get a star is still sort of like the tip of like what you really want to, you know, go for if you're a restaurant that's, you know, if that's your thing.
And you know what I love that you did with this? You have a don't skip. That was brilliant. I love that. And so and it's so funny because I can't say the word stracci.
Stracciatella.
With jamon, ham, basically a Birkin ham and corn tortellini. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Okay. Wild Child.
Wild Child, I love Wild Child. That spot, I think, has so much to do with how people in St. Petersburg like to eat right now. I think it's really on the tip of everyone's tongue. When you ask someone what restaurant do they love in St. Pete, I'd say 9 times out of 10, the answer is Wild Child. They're just doing really incredible, fun things. It's a menu that's always evolving. The food's exciting. The flavors are bright and bold and powerful. And it's a great spot.
So we heard from the owner of Elliott Astor today, and Rui Farias is historically St. Pete. He's going to be signing his book here on Thursday at the museum. And he said, we said, what do you like to eat? And he said, omakase and sushi. So number five, Koya, tell us about that.
Koya was really, they weren't the first people to do omakase. That was Sushi So Rexley here in St. Pete. But Koya, you know, they opened up this high-end omakase spot in Tampa right at the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, which was a wild, wild gamble. And they, in my opinion, do the omakase game better than any other restaurant in the city. It is expensive, but it is absolutely incredible.
Bar Terroir, very interesting group. They own Rocca, Streetlight Taco. They just, I love it. I love Parisian.
Yeah, they're doing really fun stuff. It's contemporary French food. They are really honing in on the classics, but lending their very chefy spin to it. And it's really, it's one of my favorite new restaurants this year.
And before we do number eight, I want to talk about the importance of the chef. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting, does the chef make the restaurant? Because often when the chef changes, the whole thing changes. Talk to me about that, the importance of the chef.
Well, chef-driven restaurants are really, I think, something that we've been seeing a lot more of over the last, I'd say, like decade. Sometimes, you know, if you're going to a big box hotel restaurant, that might not be the case. But a lot of the times, if it's a chef-driven restaurant, that chef really takes on, you know, it's like their like culinary identity and how they're making their mark on a plate. I think it really depends. Like those are usually the restaurants that I gravitate towards. But certainly some places that have been around for longer, they end up bringing up, you know, more culinary talent within their kitchen ranks who end up then really running that restaurant as either chef de cuisine or executive chef. And even though their name might not carry the clout of the person who actually owned and started that restaurant, say 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's still like, they're still doing incredible things, and they deserve recognition for that too.
It's like a legacy, and you can create a great restaurant and move on, and that's wonderful. It's like the Elliott Astor. The chef came from Chicago and LA and other places, and you know, now here. Brick and mortar, always a favorite here.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. Fun fact, it's one of the first, I think it is the restaurant that I ate at the first restaurant I ate at in CP, and I wasn't even living here yet. I was coming to review, like, interview for the job. And so I sat at the bar, and I knew nothing about St. Pete, and I ordered a glass of wine, and I think I had two appetizers. And I just – I felt for the first time like, oh, okay. Like, I think I get it. I think I could live here. I think I could do this. Like, it just gave me that warm feeling. And they're still doing this. They're still doing it.
Absolutely. And then I love this little one, the Tides Market.
Yeah, the Tides Market in Safety Harbor. They're a great seafood restaurant. They certainly have a couple of other things on their menu. They've got a great burger. But their focus has really on thoughtfully prepared seafood and fish. And so if that's your thing, like, there's no better place in the Tampa Bay area to go.
And in Pinellas County, The Helm is one of those places. Oh, I love that The Helm. And we're so happy they opened as well. So, and then number 10, Royal Thai.
Yeah, Royal Thai. I just discovered them this year. They've been open for, I think, a little over a year at this point. They're in Tampa. Just really incredible regional Thai cuisine.
I do want to mention one of the St. Petersburg favorites that came in at 40, Mullet's Fish Camp.
Oh, yeah. Mullet's is one of my favorites.
It's a real St. Pete vibe, right?
It really is. I mean, you know, we here in Florida, we love a fish camp, but there's a lot of places out by the beach and just really all over the place that are kind of, you know, the quality isn't the best. And Mullet's really, I think, has – that's the entire thing. That's all they do. And they're so – dedicated to that. And I mean, it's just so good.
Well, you know, I'm going to feast my eyes on all of them this year, and I'm going to try to do one a week. But I want to also point out, you also do a Do and Dine newsletter. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we do a Do and Dine newsletter. It comes out every Thursday, so you should definitely sign up for it. and in it is, like, it's actually my chance to kind of riff a little bit and to write a little bit more casually. Usually what I write about in the newsletter isn't necessarily something that gets reprinted on the site, so it's like a little nice way to get some extra content. And it's also often where we'll have little, like, scoops or things where we hear, like, what's going on around, you know, around the scene. And then I always include, every week there's, like, a special dish that I've had that I really like. And that's another thing that we usually never run on the website. So just a little bit of extras.
So you talk about in the video that you produce on the site next to your biography, which I encourage you all to look at. Food is about everything else that's not on the plate. Tell us about how we eat with our eyes and other senses.
So I think what I mean with that is that there are so many things about a restaurant besides the food that have me so enamored in the dining experience. I love sitting in a restaurant and just hearing the chatter of people around me and, you know, talking to the bartender. You know, restaurant decor has gotten so good over the last 10 years. Like, just the entire experience can be such a beautiful thing. And I think a lot of the times we just, you know, we think it's just about the food. And the food is obviously number one, but I do think that it goes beyond that as well.
It's a third place, isn't it?
It's absolutely a third place, yes.
So, you know, you use the lens of food to look at environment, politics, and education. Tell us about some of the articles that you've done that actually look through the food lens at some bigger topics.
Yeah. You know, I think in Florida, the most common connector between food and sort of larger topics that are of importance to our readers, certainly what you have to sort of talk about agriculture and the environment and everything that gets affected by hurricanes. So a lot of the coverage that I've done in the last few years has involved looking at how stone crab populations have been affected and looking at Cedar Key clams in particular. That area has been, I think they were hit 3 times over the last 2 years, maybe even 4. And their whole industry, it's small, it's boutique, and it's run by a very, very small group of people, and they are working so hard. And we love those clams. It's such a big part of the diner experience, but you never really think about what's going on, where they come from, and what that looks like.
Said by a true person from Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So what are the trends you see nationally, and what trends do you see here in a nutshell?
Oh, that's a good question. I think everywhere with drinks, the espresso martini is still just king. I mean, every single restaurant owner I talk to says they don't even really have it on the menu in a lot of places anymore because they don't have to. It's just a thing that will get ordered more than any other cocktail out there. And I think, I mean, it's not a trend that I personally love, but it definitely has proved to have some staying power. Just the classic martini and martinis in general are having a moment. That's definitely happening across the country. What else? I mean, I'm seeing a lot of caviar and everything. I'm seeing a lot of, like, Luke's kind of, like, you know, uni on this and caviar on this and foie gras. So kind of this sort of like, let's put this really upscale touch on a certain dish. It's also not necessarily my favorite. I think it's okay, but I think, you know, I'm ready for something else.
A lot of wine bars and a lot of wine bars. A lot of wine bars and charcuteries here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to talk to you about what home cooks can learn from dining out in a restaurant and how you, when you go to a restaurant, sometimes are inspired to do something at home.
Oh, gosh. I think that I probably approach it with the opposite idea. Like, I dine out at restaurants. I mean, and I will eat pretty much everything on the menu because that is my job. But a lot of the times, too, what I enjoy the most are ordering dishes that I would never think about making at home because they're just way too chefy and way too complicated. And I love cooking. I mean, I'm a big home cook. But I usually choose things. I love a good kitchen project, but I'm not necessarily trying to replicate what I saw in a restaurant kitchen because I just don't think that's I don't really think it's that doable. I don't think it's that reasonable. I think that the way after when you've worked in restaurant kitchens and you know how every single sauce is prepared and every single, you know, ingredient is cared for, those are really difficult, really like just complicated things to replicate at home.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I love that you do is you look at restaurants that are closing, which is so sad. And you really are in touch with how people feel dedicated. Like I just saw Sesh close. I mean, it is like heartbreaking. You know, I was afraid when Lolita moved from the Warehouse Arts District, they wouldn't reopen. So talk to us a little bit about the love affair that people have with their favorite restaurants and why it's important for you as a food writer.
Yeah, I mean, I think where we spend our times and which restaurants we choose to be at says a lot about who we are. I think it's the place where we celebrate, you know, anniversaries and first dates and second and third dates and birthdays. And it's, I think people form these love affairs with their neighborhood restaurant, sometimes with destination restaurants, but neighborhood restaurants in particular, places that have been around for a while that come with them throughout the years. And unfortunately, you know, the restaurant industry is also a very volatile industry. And for operators, it's really, really difficult to keep the lights on, especially now. We're coming off of a terrible summer. We're also coming off of a really, really rough, you know, year last year with two back-to-back hurricanes where people are still recovering. People are still not fully back yet. And so I think, unfortunately, I see restaurant closings as just like a big part of this beat. I don't think that's really stopping anytime soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you research the ingredients? I mean, there's so many people who talk about farm to fork or, you know, that certain shrimp comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. I know that you pay a lot of attention to truth and ingredients. Tell us about that.
I do. I you know, it depends on like what type of cuisine I'm writing about. I do find cuisines that I might have a little bit less experience with, more challenging to write about, but I like a challenge. And I think that that's usually where I end up doing a lot of research. When it comes to, you know, provenance, where the food is coming from, I'm not diving through dumpsters or calling purveyors and double checking that all of the ingredients are coming from what, you know, I'm only one person and that's just not in the wheelhouse right now. But I will say, I do pay a lot of attention when people have that on their menu, and I certainly hope they're telling the truth. I think most of the time they are.
What's up for you for 2026? I know you've got working on the new food hub, so it was very exciting. Will you share with our listeners what is going on with that?
Yes, we're launching a food hub. This really came about from just the fact I've been here about 6 years now, and our restaurant content has continued to grow in popularity every single year, more and more. And it's just, it finally became so obvious that this was a topic area and a coverage area that was of great interest to our readers. So we're expanding the team. Essentially, it's going to be a 4-person team. It'll be me, yes, senior food and dining critic, still doing kind of what I do, which is, for those people who don't know, it's really not just restaurant criticism. It's enterprise, some investigative work, it's trend stories, it's profiles, you know, it's and it is some, you know, openings and closings and those types of stories. But then we've also just brought on a new reporter, Evan Rodriguez, who's going to explicitly focus on openings and closings and that kind of breaking food news that just really seems to I feel like that's the kind of thing that everyone is just hungry for, right? They want to know what restaurant is coming where. They want to know what's going on with their favorite spot that closed. They want to know what's going into that empty building.
I love Megan Habuda. I have followed her for a long time, and she's going to be the assistant food and dining editor, and she's going to lead the strategy along with Michelle Stark. It's going to be budget, you know, I like to say cheap eats, budget-friendly dining, mom-and-pop eateries, and under-the-radar neighborhood spots. I just love that this is happening. And then, you know, shout out to Michelle Stark, of course, who does so much more than just edit and entertainment.
My gosh. She is a machine. She does everything.
So, you know, congratulations, first of all, on Tampa Bay's top 50 restaurants for the contribution you make to our community by helping us eat well and savor. Helen, parting words for choosing a restaurant to our listeners, and what really matters when you want to find a place that will become your new home away from home?
Yeah, I think I'm always telling people just to, like, get outside the box a little bit. Like, try something new. Go to a neighborhood you don't know. Try out a cuisine that you've never had before. You know, I think, unfortunately, we tend to get stuck in the places that we feel comfortable with, and that's okay. But we also tend to get a little bit stuck in this echo chamber that gets created on social media. And you see and hear about the same restaurants over and over and over again. And I would encourage people to look outside that, to do a little bit of their own exploring and try to find a place that they know nothing about, just to try it out.
And, you know, I'm going to say, folks, I am already following Instagram at Tampa Bay Times Food. I already get the do and dine.
Yeah.
And Helen, how can people reach you if they need to reach you?
I'm at hfreund@tampabay.com.
Thank you so much for being here today. Congratulations on the top 50 restaurants. We couldn't appreciate you more.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.